January 4, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro Show. Wofford Pedro Show, first Monday of the year. Brother Matt at Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, because we're still in quarantino mode. I should say we'll get to that in a minute, because I got to tell you, I'm not just man alone, people. Because of those fucking incredible software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, from Magnet Hearts, I got Jonathan, Brother Heath. Welcome aboard, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, and are you guys all in the Val?
This is Heath. I'm in Glendale.
That's the Val. East part, but still Val.
Northeast LA now.
Okay.
Jonathan and I are in Highland Park.
Ah, okay, so on Pedro's side of the hills.
Exactly.
Yeah, Nels Klein lived a little while in Glendale. He said, the hombre are wonderful. Like, they got so much to do, they follow your ass around after gigs and harass you. So.
Oh, wow.
that might be just an urban myth. I don't know. He's in New York City nowadays.
I used to see Nels at Vaughn's grocery shopping all the time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He stands out. He's a big guy.
Yeah. And he's actually, it might have been his twin, Alex, except he's on the west side, so he's also a drummer man.
Oh, really?
Speaking of drummer man, let's talk about the fucking shit I played to start the show off. John Coltrane was something called the Drum Thing, which is obviously highlighting Mr. Elvin Jones. And I know about two of you guys going back to Firehose days in a band called Backbiter and sharing stage together. And this proj is missing that man. But that's okay. We'll get into that later. Then we had the Magnet Hearts with the, now people, I've played you the whole album that they made last year or the year before. I don't know exactly when it was meant, but it was recent, and I played that. But then, you know, I played all them songs one at a time on the show. I wanted to bring the guys on, so fuck, we had no more material. What, play the whole fucking album again? So what they did is they went out and recorded another record. Which I think is fucking bitching, you know? It's not like I'm, you know, make it be so and the wish granter fucker, or they're the wish granters. But it's interesting how music can be like that. It can motivate or whatever, or, you know, a fellow music clown or whatever can give the word and then things start to happen. I'm just so glad you guys made this record and that you're on the show to talk about it. Look, my pop said this is a dangerous word, and it wasn't spelled this way by accident. But I'm going to assume this is a John proj to start off with. And then you brought Jonathan and Heath aboard?
How did this start, Jonathan? Basically, it was about 2.5, about 3 years ago, was it?
Yeah, actually, I just did a record, the last Preach record. The one that came out when we played with you guys at that club in Highland Park.
Freaks, and, the drummer man, right? Turned guitar guy. But I heard Bob Lee got scissors back on the drums.
Yeah, it's great. You know,
yeah, loves. So anyway, not to get off on tangent, but so you were doing this Freaks album,
right? And, you know, it was a great. It was one of the better recording experience I had. You know, we did it. You know, suddenly everyone's recording at home, so you're not spending a fortune on recording. You know, it was the first time I had time to actually, you know, work on stuff, do it till it's really great, and actually write some stuff in the studio. So I mean, my creative juices were flowing. I just got divorced too, so I had a lot of brain energy going on. So I went, and that last album I pretty much wrote right after that Freaks experience. I had all this energy. So I put together the band just around that, you know, so it's a different thing than, you know, Backbiter was always a very democratic kind of thing. You know, the three of us brought our thing in there, you know, no one ever told anyone what to do. It just sort of was very organic. This one was more, I wanted to play with John because we were in the Motorcycle Black Madonnas.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Was it that your baby?
Yeah, you know, but it was with my ex-wife. So, you know, once the marriage was over, the band was kind of kaput. So.
Now, I got a different experience because me and Kay actually got tighter.
Yeah, you know, I think you're the
No, everything's different. Everything's different. Everything's different. Yeah. Anyway, well, I didn't mean that. So, I did assume wrong. See, my pop said, when you use that word, you make an ass out of you and me.
And yeah, but I mean, you're actually.
I didn't really make an ass out of you, though. I made an ass out of me.
you are kind of right in a way, though, because John's been kind of the guy just nudging everybody to get busy, to get their ass in gear. You know, especially on this one, John's like, "Hey, aren't we gonna do some more stuff?" You know, he was pushing me to do this. I could have easily just hibernated this whole year. I'm kind of a hermit a little bit, so. You know, between John doing that and then you asking for more stuff, you know, nothing sparks creativity.
Well, I'm not up to this second record yet. I'm still up to the first record because I never had you guys on the show, so we never got to talk about it. But I'm getting the kind of notion that John is more of an instigator than a constipator.
I am well versed in both, proficient at both, and. You know, when Jonathan wrote all these songs, I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. My friend's wife had just been killed by a drunk driver, and I was out there helping him through some really dark times. And I am someone that does not like to text message much. And when I get serial texts that go bing, 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 my blood pressure just shoots through the roof. And this was about 1 a.m. in Michigan, and Jonathan had texted me 7 or 8 song sketches that he had recorded with his iPhone and his acoustic guitar. And I was like, what's going on here? He was like crapping songs. And I was like, and then it was like, hey, you want to record a record? And I was like, are you kidding me? You know? And we just started, John and I started working together, hashing these songs out. And,
you mean from Ann Arbor?
No, I came back to L.A. in
now,
a few
now,
weeks.
Ann Arbor, do you have history there? That's the home of the fucking Stooges.
Well, I'm actually from Columbus, Ohio, but, you know, Route 23 runs through both
U.S.
Ann Arbor 23. And Columbus.
Yeah, U.S. 23.
And I'm absolutely aware of all the Stooges' history and went and found Iggy's trailer park.
But that's not in Ann Arbor. That's in Ypsilanti next door.
It is. Not far from the bowling alley. And we went by the Ashton's place and helped me piece together all those memories from the various Iggy books that I've read. So
the Ashton house is right next to a boneyard, and Ronnie used to take care of raccoons and possums and cats and stuff from there.
That does not surprise me.
Look, I want to play, you know, I didn't tell the people that we played Echo Man, but from the new record, I want to play I Gotta Move.
Baby, she ain't there. I'll fill my gap and comb my Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Started that chunk of music off with Magnet Hearts. I Gotta Move. Explorer, dedicated to Kevin O'Meara. Explorer Naturalist Elf from Dustin Wong. He lost his buddy and wrote a tune about it, which is the most beautiful thing you can do for a buddy, or one of them. Obama's Pregnant after that with the Doppler Shift around the D.C. area. Hellbians from Brighton, England. Prison Made a Manor. And Barry Burko Band. Diamond Nail. I think Barry's soon going to move to Berlin. The Magnet Hearts. Living On from the new... So when you guys were working on that first batch, you get back, John, from Ann Arbor, and when does the name... Is the name of the project come out real quick?
Yeah, this is Jonathan. I got it from an elevator song. You know, Slipping Inside This House. He goes,
which is a Tommy. I think it's a Tommy lyric, right?
Yeah. So
people don't know, even though Rocky sang the songs, people in the 13th floor elevators, the drummer man wrote a lot of them.
Yeah. You know, and he, Tommy Hall, you know, playing the jug, you know, he supposedly was a big part of the production, especially on Easter Everywhere, from everything I've read. So, you know, he was kind of a whack job, actually a right wing dude, not a left wing hippie. But, you know, kind of connected into this weird, like, L. Ron Hubbard kind of mishmash of religions and psychology and blah, blah, blah. And it really worked, though. And the band was magical, so.
Yeah, I like the words. Sometimes you got the art and you got the individual. And you need kind of a Berlin Wall or a thing between them because... you don't even have to provide that. Sometimes it's just there. And I know, you know, right away when I started playing with you, John, or sharing a stage with you, I noted a connect with the Rocky voice. Even though Houston and you're like, what, Rhode Island?
Yeah.
But that shows you about music, like John Fogerty, very Northwest Bayou. Like El Cerrito.
So, well, you know, I think music puts people in these, you know, I was like a hermit as a kid, just playing guitar, listening to records. So it doesn't matter where you are. Your head is in Austin or whatever, you know, even though I'm in Barrington, Rhode Island.
Well, you know what Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from. It's where you're at.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, it's a little slang, but you can get the drift on. So, okay, you and John are trading files, or are you actually playing together?
Well, he was sending them to me, and I was trying to picture how I would play over them. And I got back. I actually did several trips to Ann Arbor that year, and I think probably in February or March we started practicing together. We brought Heath in. Our schedules were all really tight. Heath's producing TV shows. Jonathan was preparing to go back to Europe with the Freaks.
Yep.
And I think we maybe got four or five rehearsals in. And I ended up going to Europe with the Freaks to be their merch guy and cowbell player, occasional cowbell player. And, you know, that was... You know, preparing for months for that, and we got back, and we were pretty exhausted and didn't do much. And one of the things that kind of made that first record happen was Bob Lee, and that we did that Something Shocking from the Stocking Christmas album.
That's right. Yeah.
That you participated in, yeah. And Bob and I had arranged for sessions at our friend's studio, bringing in different bands like the Darts and John Wall and the Amadons, and we're starting to look at the song list and all the bands lined up, and Jonathan and I looked at each other like, shit, Bob's in every band on this record. So, you know.
Well, Bob Lee, he's definitely a motivator also.
Jonathan's like, we should be on more songs. So there were only two Santa Saba songs on that. And so... At one of these sessions, my drums were set up, and we're like, let's write a Christmas song. And Jonathan literally pulled one out of his sleeve, and Heath came over, and to the studio, and we recorded it in about a half hour, I think. And then I was like, wow, that went so well. Can I just leave my drums at the studio? We'll be back next week to record a record. And that's basically what happened. So a lot of it was done spontaneously.
Yeah, and then... Well,
I got involved was when I think you guys called me about doing the Christmas tune, and I think I came by and we just jammed on it. And I think while I was there, Jonathan was like, "Oh, hey, by the way, I got divorced and I wrote 10 really great songs. You want to record a whole album?"
Yeah, that's what that, I wanted to know the timeline. So actually, it was kind of a parallel thing, like John and Jonathan are writing songs, and then this Bob Lee with the Christmas thing comes up. And they kind of dovetail, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. I think the Christmas thing was the catalyst to getting together, maybe. Jonathan had certainly been writing some great tunes. And I think once we got in a room all together and started playing, it kind of clicked.
And the basic tracks were done over three hour sessions on Thursday nights. And then Jonathan finished up everything else.
And we got Danny Magoo. Do you know Danny, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in Social Distortion for a while and played with Tom Waits and lots of people. So, you know, I knew these songs needed keyboards. I was used to having keyboards with Freaks. And
also, there was a version of Black Backbiter with organ.
Yeah, we had a Hammond organ player and backbiter too, Jeff Mundell. So, you know, Danny... did everything from his house, or you know, it's the great thing about technology, like what we're doing right now. He literally mailed it all in, and you know, eventually we got together in the same room and practiced and did some shows. But it's at his house, he had all these vintage keyboards. So on the album, you hear a harpsichord. It's a real harpsichord. You hear Hammond B3, which he's known for. The pianos were real pianos. He used a lot of Mellotron, a real actual Mellotron. So like the strings and all those interesting sounds are Mellotron. And he's been a big part of the sound too. You know, I'd always wanted to play with him. I was always afraid to ask because, you know, he's like a professional musician, you know, playing with big people on tour, or making a living from it. And someone said, just ask him, he'll play with you. And I did, and he did. So,
besides being at Danny's pad and recording, did you guys do prac?
Not much, you know. Like John mentioned, we did like maybe 5 rehearsals getting these down, you know. And Heath and I are, you know, played together forever, and he was a big part of arranging the backwriter songs, even though I was the primary songwriter. So.
You know, also good at arranging and memorizing fucking parts is Bob Lee, man. He's got such a musical memory.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, so, you know, I knew he helped everything come along so fast because he's, you know, it was kind of psychically linked or something. I don't know. Something unsaid happens.
And I've been playing with Jonathan for 14 years now. So there's a lot of, you know, natural intuitions that just happen, you know.
What do you call this? Like symbiosis? Osmosis?
Yep. Or like, you know, Dylan would talk about that period where he wrote all those great songs between like 64 and 67. He's like, I don't remember writing most of those. It was like they were dictated to me, you know, like there's a stream or, you know.
I'm
not spiritual, but, you know, there is something to that collective unconscious, and I think anyone who's played music with other people in a meaningful way kind of has experienced it.
Yeah, some people say that's the methamphetamine period of Bob Dylan. And, you know, there's a contest every year where there's different Bobs, right? And the meth Bob always wins.
That's the best. He looks the best, too.
Some pointy shoes, sunglasses on at nighttime, and hair way out. Yeah. People, if you want to know what I'm talking about, there's Mr. Pennebaker made something called Don't Look Back. It's his, like, first tour in England. And he's a Yvon Terrible. Excuse my French. terrible pronunciation. Okay, so would you consider Danny the producer man, or was it self-produced?
I'd say it was, I was probably the producer, but Justin Burrell, who recorded it, you know, it was kind of, I trusted his opinion and asked it a lot, so it was kind of like between me and him, but, you know, pre-production was definitely, you know, John and Heath, and then Danny was doing his parts from his house, so, but with very little guidance. I'd write him notes, and then he would do whatever he thought sounded good, and whatever he did was always great.
Yeah, so
he was surprised how much I put on it.
You guys would send him the stuff with all three of you, and then he'd react to it, right?
Right, yeah.
Really turnkey.
You know, that can happen really good, because they got a certain kind of perspective. They haven't been in the practice and the stuff, you know. It's like a kibitzer in chess, right? They can just walk over, hey, just move the knight over here.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, part of the concept of this for me, you know, the way everything was put together, that it was part of what energized me from the Freaks recording was everything was in layers. You know, I started with the songs. The guitars aren't super loud, distorted like most of the bands I've been in. So it created a lot of sonic space. So I saw it in layers, and I saw the songs in layers, because there was a kind of a circular theme going on. So it kind of took the pressure off of everything, you know, like it wasn't dependent on any one instrument, any one thing. I knew that all these parts going together, we're going to equal something pretty good.
You got good, what is it called? Faith. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. January 4, 2021. Dish Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, the Magnet Hearts. Hold tight for hour two. January 4, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
She's sitting in her house. There's a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth,
'cause a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth. As a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth. Ain't that just a little tip too much like on the other side of the glass, the sky goes on forever. Just on the other side of the glass, the sky goes on forever. Just on the other side of the glass, the sky goes on forever. So the little butterfly keeps on struggling to be free. People outside passing by on their way to here and there. People outside. Now you can flap your little wings, flap your little wings forever. You can flap your little wings, flap your little wings forever. You can flap your little wings, flap your little wings forever. There's a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth. There's a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth. There's a little butterfly trapped in a phone booth.
life is okay. I retired from Cerritos College. I was a professor out there. I taught cosmetology and technology. And, you know, it was okay. And I belonged to the teacher's thing. But now I don't get to go because I don't drive. And even though people live out here, nobody volunteers to pick you up. We're all retired, and we're all retired from different departments. So when I go to the meetings, they're all glad to see me, but they don't offer to pick me up.
Walk for Pedro show. Started off the second hour, the Magnet Hearts doing Poppy Peak. We'll get into that in a little bit. So a skist after that with Butterfly Trapped in a Phone Booth. David Greenberger and Prime Lens with No Rides. Bronx from Osaka with All Japan Nerd Association. Red Cross. Steve McDonald's going to be on the show soon. Dumb Angel. Sassafras with Dead Ringer Dirge. That was a good band. Sailor Alexander, right? I think they were called Stab City. It's his own band, but I think they're gone too. Dr. Herman Green, we lost this incredible sax man from Memphis a month ago. Lady Rose. And finally, You Don't Know, the Magnet Hearts. Tell me about this fucking Poppy Pete.
So this is, live in Northeast, in the Northeast corner of Highland Park, and Poppy Peak is, a mountain, and it's the tallest part of Highland Park. And we can see all the way down to Pedro from up here, and we can see also deep into the San Fernando Valley. And, you know Paul Lax from Double Knot Spy Car?
Yeah, he's played a slide on this.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call them mountains, though. They call it the Hollywood Hills. They ain't them fucking mountains, dude. Maybe in England.
So he's my neighbor, and we have 7 acres of undeveloped land behind us, and it's a developer bought all these parcels and wants to put $3 million homes.
You know what? I've been out this part. The Are You a Cop guys live out in, actually, it's where we lost Tony Dill. Shadow Hills, Sun Valley. It gets really rural out there.
Yeah.
And people have designs.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, idea.
And we're trying to save this last piece of green space, and we're leading a campaign. We've got 9,000 signatures, and we're working with our elected officials, and we created a two-minute YouTube video, and I needed music for it, and we just couldn't get it together, and at the last second, I called Jonathan. I was like, hey, do you got any guitar ditties you can just give for this? And he sent it, and we immediately put it in the video, and then our campaign took off, and now people are seeking our help to save their properties.
No, but, that's bitching. That's bitching.
The name of this hill is Poppy Peak.
Yeah. And probably, you know what? At one point, there was probably a bunch of heroin-producing plants up there.
Well, that's what it was named for.
It's only, again, I'm doing that bad word, assume, but
that's what John wants to preserve.
Apparently, there were so many poppies on there, you could see the hill from Santa Monica Bay. Explorers could.
You know, the California poppy is actually our state flower, but it don't have a lot of opium, so.
Yeah.
Okay. It's only for looks. but anyway. It's probably good. That's not a bad thing. What I want to get at is this second album. So the Poppy Peak tune really ain't part of Jonathan's batches. This just came up. So Magnetic Hearts can be anything, right?
Yeah, I
thought
of this as like, just letting loose, letting all my different influences, which is a lot of things. I like a lot of different things, so. Just not censoring myself, I think, is a big part of this. And so, I mean, this tune's more of a country-ish kind of Big Star meets...
Come on. You sound like Spin Magazine. Music is music.
Yeah. But,
we don't got to put a fucking label on it. I want to play Ba-Boo-Da-Da-Da.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. We heard Badu Da Da Da. You know what this reminds me of? This title. There's this famous tape of the Trogs in the studio, and they're trying to work out a drum fill. Bob Lee could probably quote this motherfucker, but it's like, no, bad, bad, dude, and they're obviously Baracha on their brains, and I don't think they ever get it right. But anyway, there's some secrets about this song. We're not going to reveal people because probably it's going to have another incarnation. We're going to up to now, we've played 5 songs from the new Magnet Heart record. These other guys are, because I've rushed them so much, they're still in phases of development, so these are kind of rough mixes. We had Transit Drum with the tribute stage. I don't know what stage that is, but Quiet Pig from Italy off that Sit to Go. Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis with Anita. The New Harnessians. I guess they're into harnesses. Version 3. Yeah, I don't know about this noun, Harnessians, pronoun. And then Plus Dog Plus. Other Malays, interesting music. And then finally, Sleep Party People, a sweet song about love. So, I mean, literally, you guys were mixing last night, right?
Yes. not all of it, but yeah, some of it. So you can hear there's varying... you're hearing it in various stages of production. So some songs like Poppy Peak are kind of ready for prime time, and the one you just played, not as much.
It was great to have the motivation to get some shit done this year.
I have to say, this was purely selfish on my part because I just wanted to play and I was just trying to find some normalcy.
Scary word. Well, I don't like that word, normal. You're talking about healthy. You're talking about healthy, right, and productive and treating people decently. Because, you know, I think in about 19-whatever land and what was normal, we probably couldn't tolerate.
Right.
You know the point I'm trying. I'm not trying to be right or correct or more correct.
I always say normal is boring.
Or it's close to that word average or regular.
Right. Well, I remember. Rosemary Carroll. We both had her as a lawyer.
So I still do.
Because she once said something very similar, talking about, you know, people like to talk about how great the 70s were, but. You know, pick out any stretch, and the 70s kind of sucked. It was awful.
There was a lot of, my opinion, a lot of looking at yourself. What do you call that when you follow yourself?
Yeah.
Narcissism. Like for music, we wouldn't listen to music that was 5 years old. It was ridiculous. I remember I went to that.
All the music we like.
Well, I'm just telling you my experience. My experience was like, you did not, I mean, here's an example. The Woodstock movie and Sean Anak, you know, one of the midnight showings, right? Sean Anak comes out, and there's motherfuckers booing the screen. This is my dad's music! I mean, that shit was only like 15 years old, 10 years old. People now, a young man now will like 50-year-old Black Sabbath. There's no problem.
Yeah.
There was a big problem.
We have a lot of experience with that.
Right? So I think what you mean is, like, there gets to be stereotypes and cliches, and people don't really want to look at the truth.
Right. Or I think with music, it's easy to assign a time period to it and think that the time was so crucial. And, you know, maybe it was to experiencing it then, but, you know, right now, we just have this amazing catalog of music, and who cares when it was produced? Like, Django Reinhardt sounds like, to me, like it could have been recorded this morning, you know?
You know, Funhouse, fuck.
Yeah.
50 years old, give me a break. It could have been recorded next week. But I'll tell you what stands up from the 70s is the slider snare drum. I mean, Tony Visconti got a good snare drum sound. I mean, it is so fucking fat, and, you know, maybe it's the way the Will Legend played it. I think he's the only guy left.
I think it was caked with cocaine.
You think that's what did it? then we should have all kinds of good sound and snare, right?
Yeah,
and
better
fucking, yeah, that industry was like swimming in that shit. But a lot of them don't sound that good. Yeah, so, you know, it's trippy about that. But, yeah, people should be a little more, I agree with you big time. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. Wap Pedro Show, January 4th, 2021. Special guest, Magnet Hearts. Hold tight for hour three. January 4th, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro. So we start off the third hour with a rough mix of Completely Blue, but still for Watt, kicking up much dust. The Magnet Hearts. Crane after that with Distant Echoes, and Mold Omen out Balmore with Estate. And finally, Arubu Avua with Neonda B7. Let's talk about the bass. Now, these tunes were, you weren't really in on the composition, right, Brother Heath?
Not on this second record as
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, the second album.
But he co-wrote Completely Blue, though.
Oh, okay. Then,
sure, we almost forgot that. Jonathan was like, hey, remember this riff we worked on a long time ago? I was like, yeah, yeah.
What do you mean a long time ago? You mean before Magnetic Hearts existed? Magnet Hearts existed?
Yeah, I think Completely Blue goes back to later Backbiter days, right? Jonathan probably knows the year and stuff. But
yeah, 2006.
Okay, so a little while ago. That's... Yeah, a little while ago. And so
that is like recent, but that's 15 years ago.
And you were the forger of the riff.
Forger.
Forge like a blacksmith, not like a criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
More emphasis. You're more like emphasis. Okay, and you're not like some fucking conniver. I'm not saying
that. Yeah, we worked out a while ago, but
But I like this idea. You know, there's nothing like a riff, right, to make a song off of.
Yeah, it was like a guitar part, and then you know, I wanted to kind of keep the bass kind of simple behind it. Nothing too crazy.
Okay, but the majority of these tunes, they brought the guitar, and probably drums too, right? You were the last layer?
Yeah, before Danny.
Of course, the keyboard, of course.
But yeah, I think, you know, by the time I went in to just lay down the bass parts at John's house on this, they kind of had the rough demos recorded, and I was, you know, they sent me, like, some stuff to listen to, I think, maybe the week before, you know, and I was just play it over and over, just listening, but I didn't really pick up the bass until I got to John's house with it. So I wanted to feel a little spontaneous. I usually like my bass parts to be a little thought out, and that usually comes from getting to practice with them. You know, I think on the, especially with the Backbiter later stuff, we spent a lot of time just kind of playing the songs over and over so that when we got to the studio, we weren't wasting time and could just kind of go in and play the parts the way I wanted to play them.
Yeah, if you're a bean cutter, how much for a prac pad, how much for studio time?
Yeah, I know. Studio costs more.
Yeah, I think so, right? So people who use studio time for a prac pad are kind of insane. But maybe not. But because of the situation, yeah, we're all doing this alone and trading the files and stuff.
I mean, normally you get, you know, I love getting to play together, and that's one of the things I missed a lot this year.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, I mean, reality deals us a hand. I don't like the fact that some babies are born with cancer, but why does that fucking happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff to wring our hands about and cry and whine about, but I think what you guys did by, you know, yeah, getting over the hell of not getting to play with each other in person, you still put together a real bitchin' record.
Well, thanks, man. We appreciate that for sure, and it was great to get to do it.
I mean, in spite of everything, you know what I mean? I mean, you know me. I would let you know. Hey, this sounds like it's all fucking piecemeal and, you know, dislocated, tiny, unrelevant parts just floating in some fucking spody broth. But it ain't. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it sounds coming out of the speakers. And if you guys unite a fucking combo to deliver on some good songwriting, I think you want, it's a victory.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious to listen to it. I mean, I've been listening to it back since we recorded, and I'm wondering if, like, a different bass part will come to me if we start playing it, you know, in a room together. Like, I would have done this, or I would have done this, but...
Yeah, that's happened to me a lot.
I don't second guess.
You know, and I bet you everybody who's written books, hey, I should have changed that sentence. You know, yeah, that's what's that called, Monday Quarterback? I want to play Pretty Things. And by the way, Jonathan, you a fan of the Pretty Things?
Yeah, I mean, that... reminded me of something from like SF Sorrow or Parachute.
Can I tell you that was Ron Ashton's favorite band was Pretty Things.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show, we heard Pretty Things, Rough Mix from Magnet Hearts. And then Rapin with Ajigas. It's Norwegian, I guess. Actually, I think it's a dude faking he's Norwegian. Of course, that's how you do, you know, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, right? And then the Magnet Hearts, finally, the Tremolo song. Rough Mix. Now, you know about Watt and Tremolo, right? Fucking no. Born on the fucking bayou. Right? Can you even have that song without tremolo and cowbell?
Yeah, no. It's, you know, when John and I were working on that, that was a big part of it. I was playing a Vox AC30, and they have a good one in there, but it doesn't get super fast. So I was kind of a, you know, kind of ended up being a big part of the sound.
Well, did you move the knob to meet John? Or did John move the drumming to meet the tremolo?
You know, the funny thing about it is, originally we were going to do it really cutting, like, you know that Liar song, Help You Land?
Oh, yeah.
Like that, it was going to be like that noticeable, but, you know, it made it a little hard to play. And the weird thing is, with the tremolo, just getting it sort of in the ballpark of the tempo, you know, when you rolled it down a little bit, made it a little more subtle, it didn't matter whether it was perfectly in time or not, because when you listen to it, it sounds in time. So, but we didn't really labor on the time issues.
I mean, Jonathan, you've always had fucking righteous gear, okay? You always have it. And Brother Heath, too, man. Some good fucking basses and old-timey stuff, you know? And
oh, yeah.
So you're probably more authority on these kind of things like this. But at the end of the day, what is it? Sound coming out of speakers.
And ends of the fingers and everything else after that, you know, helps. But Hendrix sounds like Hendrix, whether he's playing a Flying V or a Strat.
Or which Strat? Some of them he played for one gig, right? He just threw them away. Right. John, what kind of drums did you use?
Both albums were recorded with Ludwig drums. Okay. And I was a Gretsch guy, and now I'm a Ludwig guy, and my wife's last name is Ludwig as well.
But it's probably Ludwig.
The new record was recorded with a brand new set of drums I bought. I just had to have them. They're Ludwig Club Dates, and they have a psychedelic mod orange finish.
And what about the mic? Was it close mic?
Basically, for what we did is, I have a whisper room in my garage. I don't know if you've seen those vocal booths at NAMM, but my whisper room holds two drum sets. And so I was using an overhead Sennheiser mic over my shoulder.
I'm going to ask you again, did you do close mic or did you do, you know, because Led Zeppelin Volume 4, right? That's two microphones, and one of them's in the hallway, right? Or a stairway.
Yeah. So we had close mic on the kick drum and snare, and then a stereo condenser overhead, and that was it.
Man, to me, getting mic and drums is a fucking, it's an art.
You know, I had suggested him doing it like that because I read an interview with Shel Talmy talking about how he got those great drum sounds with the Who and the Kinks, and that's all he did. He did a condenser overhead over the drummer's right shoulder or left shoulder, I don't know, one of his shoulders, and then two close mics, and that was it. And I think most of that drum mix is the overhead.
We had four inputs, and one of them was for Jonathan's. And an interesting thing is that you listen to the playback, and you know what the mic's picking up. So, like in the Pretty Things song tribute, I hit the tom-toms really hard in certain parts so they would come through better.
And that's great. You know, playing is a big part of it. For one reason why the cymbals are too loud, people bang the fuck out of their cymbals too hard.
That's me.
I think I mentioned it off when we weren't on the mic, but, you know, a deadline definitely helps with the creative process. And just, you know, an old friend saying they like what you're doing, can I have some more beans more than you know? So thank you.
Okay, people, it's been the January 4th, 2021 Dish Swap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.